Okay, today's the 1st of November, and I'm already in the middle of the class. So he's using these images, whether the image of wave and water, or the images of the waterfall. But we have to know it's just an image. It's an attempt to use what's ordinary in our senses and in our experience to get us to see the extent that our life is much more than our images and concepts of life that our thoughts and beliefs lead us to, or even that our experiencing tries to funnel the whole of life into.
May I ask a question related to this?
Sure.
This image of the waterfall and images of the waterfall and the waves, are they unique to the person who first wrote this, or has this been long-standing imagery?
No. This is imagery and long-standing imagery in Buddhist tradition. You'll see. This wave ocean used in a slightly different way. Dogen talks about it at length. And if you remember, this whole discussion that builds into the waves is based on 5th century Common Era Indian writings, among other things, by Vasubandhu, who some of you might be familiar with. So these images have been used for a long time.
So you could say they're classical in a sense.
They're classical, yes. And they're elaborated on in different ways by different people, and they emphasize different things. But it's not new. It's certainly not Yasutani's invention, nor is the whole set of images of different levels where he goes 1 to 6, 7, 8, etc. That's part of what's known as the Tathagatha Garbha womb storehouse images that are connected to various sets of sutras and teachings in Buddhist tradition, both in India and in China and in Tibet, Japan, etc. I don't know if they're in Tibetan tradition or not, so I don't want to say that. They might very well be, because they're Indian, and that's where Tibet gets its Buddhism from. But these images are classical. And he's, in some sense, simplify them. And simplifying them in ways to make it easily understandable. But really, there are more elaborate, more detailed, and even connected to various forms of meditation and other practices to grasp them. And of course, he uses modern images when he talks about the movie screen as an analogy. Obviously, 5th century India didn't have movie screens or the whole idea of movement in that way, and yet there is that. So is that okay?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Okay, so he talks about, so you've read these discussions of the imagery, both in terms of the ocean and in terms of the waterfall. So he's attempting to integrate this not fixed, permanent, separate self, and yet the universality, and also the idea of cause and effect and consequences of cause and effect. And cause and effect as a way of trying to give us images to understand something that's really not accessible to our, what should I say, our ordinary senses. Because from an ordinary senses point of view, we have no sense of where the cause and effect either of past is or of future is, or all this stuff he talks about, karma and consequences and seeds. We don't really have a sense of that in our life. And yet, what he's saying is this is very real and it's important. So, for instance, on page 32, in the middle of the second paragraph, he has a sentence or two sentences that I think sum it up. So this is page 32. From moment to moment, fragments. In other words, each moment is this moment. And yet, these fragments, meaning this moment, whole and complete, is an endless continuum. And yet this endless continuum is no fixed entity, which is the fragments. So that's in a sense, and the continuousness is not only continuous from the point of view of just when we're born to when we die, but in all directions, even though we don't have a sense of how this connectedness happens. And that's difficult, except one, if we discover this in our own practice, the interconnectedness, in one sense, you could say sitting enables us to have a intimate experiential sense of the interconnectedness, and at the same time, an experiential sense of the no fixed, permanent, separate self. In other words, there is no self that's not related and not interrelated with everything else. And yet, it's all just this moment. The if you want to say fragments, as he says, and even though in our way of thinking about it, we tend to think of those as mutually contradictory, just as we tend to think of the idea of the individuality of a particular wave and the unity of the whole ocean as, well, it's okay to talk about the ocean that way, but that's not a way a person is, and that's not the way I am. And yet, that's exactly what he's saying. So even though we seem different, as he says, on the surface, each individual is different, just as waves are different, and from the perspective of looking at a wave, it doesn't seem to be the same as the other wave, or even in color, in shape, in form, in strength, in duration, etc. And yet, it's all equal. And this all equal extends in all directions, or, let me say even more than all equal, all interconnected. So we've talked about this before in the past when we talked about things like the image of Indra's net, a net in which there are jewels, and each node of the jewel of the net reflects and is connected with all the other nodes all throughout the universe. So that's some of the images that are used. But these images are only encouragement. They're not that you have to buy into the whole image, but that the image is an encouragement for us to go beyond our fixed self-centered point of view which causes us so much trouble. And you don't have to decide where you're going to go. You just have to be able to let go of what you hold on to. And that's why our practice is about experiential, about being the experiencing and discovering for ourselves, not buying into new ideas and saying, okay, I'll substitute one set of ideas for another. So he's offering these ideas as more a way to counter the fixed ideas we tend to hold of ourselves, not to say you have to buy into these other ones, but rather here's an alternative way to be able to understand this very same, what we could call birth, death, life, as moment, moment, and yet, even though it's momentary, it's yet interconnected, and yet there's also cause and effect in all directions. So that's the point of clarifying this with these various images. If they're useful, good. If they're not useful, let them come and let them go. And if there's aspects of them that you find lead you to want to ask questions and clarify, please do that. So I want to stop now because, in a sense, we've talked about this for a few classes and you've read this all. And so before I go on to chapter 4, Law of Causation, I want to stop and see if you have any points. That's on page 35. So anything up till then that you want to bring up, please do.
Well, I was, these images and they seem to be, I tend to want to, I find myself wanting to solidify them, make them really kind of like concretize them or something. So I guess there's some danger in doing that. But so how do we handle these? How do we work with these images without it taking over?
Don't worry about the images concretizing, because really we're already concretized in a set of images that we carry around all the time without even noticing. In fact, it's more than concrete. It's double, triple concrete with reinforcements and rebars, etc., which is the self-centered, separate, fixed, permanent self and universe. And not just ourself, but we believe that of all the other beings that we encounter. See? So, as I said, it's an attempt for you to actually become looser, like water, about images, so that you can have these watery images that are not so fixed, so that the ocean and the waves are constantly changing, and be able to have that fluidity of images. And the same with the waterfall that seems one thing, and then as you get closer, you can see all the different aspects of it. And he keeps coming back to it in different ways, so that, for instance, in the beginning of the chapter on page 35, in the first paragraph, he sums it up again, where he says, this is the first paragraph, where in one sense you could say, he says, I spoke about Buddha nature and I stressed two facts, that as human beings we are absolutely equal in our substance, and I would say as beings, and that we have absolutely equal potentiality, he says, to be enlightened. That is what is meant by having equal essence or Buddha nature. And we could even leave out to be enlightened, we have absolutely equality in being Buddha nature. except that it's not actualized in our life for us. And he says then the next part, a few sentences later, we are all absolutely different from one another according to our background and training. And by background means not just the story that you have about your background, but it's the having different karma according to the law of cause and effect. And this is what I call differentiation, meaning whether it has to do with genetics, biological, psychological, etc., etc., or experience. All are different, and this difference doesn't take away from the equality and the interrelatedness and interdependentness and interpenetratingness. And that's the important part. We tend to think that these are mutually exclusive, because that's the way our thinking and language encourages us.
What do you mean mutually exclusive?
That if it's me, that doesn't include you, because you're out there and I'm here. And yet here we are speaking and I'm hearing you and you're hearing me. So when you hear me, is it me that you're hearing, or is it the sound that you're hearing right now? Is it in California, or is it in Illinois, or is it somewhere in between, or who knows where? That's what I mean.
Okay.
Oh, that's one aspect of it.
Camille, I may be mixed up, but I think I haven't prepared chapter 4 because I thought we were to do chapter 3.
It's okay.
Okay, but haven't read any of this.
But you've read chapter 3.
Yeah, but not chapter 4.
Okay, but I just went to the beginning of chapter 4, which is a summation of chapter 3. And or everything before that.
I need to read it myself and chew on it, as you say.
Yes.
Other question I have. Were you finished?
Oh, yeah, I'm finished.
How is this different from theory, the kind of stuff that Yasutani, is it?
Yes.
Yeah, that he's talking about, you know, the Shiki and the...
Yes.
Like you, all this and the graphs and stuff. How does that differ from theory? If there's some kind of theory one could conjure up or.
Well, what he's attempting to do that is to offer you an alternative to expand, or I should say, to let go of, or at least to. Loosen your grip on the, what you might call the self-centered perspective of separate, fixed self and world and all that goes with that. This isn't a substitute for Zazen, but this is and it's not a theory you need to memorize, but this is useful in supporting you in encouraging you to do Zazen and maybe help clarify some of what comes up in the way of how could this be possible. So in that sense, that's what this is. This study is an encouragement to do practice and an encouragement to help guide where your practice goes. So read this. You don't like it, fine. But if I were to ask you, how do you understand a particular part? For instance, how do you understand this interpenetration or this life is continuous? How do you explain it? Or how do you explain that it's not continuous? Part of it is to see that there is a way of having what seems to be, from a rational point of view, mutually contradictory, having them be there. So you can have a wave and you could have an ocean, and being the wave doesn't contradict with being the ocean, and being the ocean doesn't contradict from being the wave. And being one wave doesn't separate you from the other waves. So it's analogies to help you go and to help us go beyond our usual boundaries of thinking. Because our boundaries of thinking lead us to do all sorts of self-centered things that justified by our perspective of that's the reason I should be angry at him. That's the reason I should be disappointed with myself. That's the reason I should judge this as better and this as worse. That's the reason, and you go on with all the reasons that we have when we believe those reactive habits.
Is that, that sounds, is that like a process of clarification for?
Yes, for, could be.
Uh-huh. What about, like, before you said something about the speakers or the origination of our program here, either from California or Illinois?
I don't know. What about that? That's long gone.
Well, sort of like clarifying something like that. I come to the point where I don't really know whether.
Good. I don't know is good. That's the best thing.
Is that clarification of some sort, or is that not? Or is that still kind of murky and muddy or something? You know.
I don't know if it's a clarification or not. It's good for you to acknowledge, or for us to acknowledge. I don't know. Don't know. Have a don't know attitude to things, and then how do we respond? If I ask you, are you there? How are you going to respond? Don't think about it. Respond.
Yeah.
Yes, here I am. Good. Then you don't have to worry about if you're in California or Illinois, or if the sound is going to Illinois, or the sound is coming from California. Is it here or there? That those are irrelevant. But we also do that with all sorts of other things. Today someone sent me an interview. I don't know. I don't want to go into that. I'll leave it. I'm sorry. It'll take us off in another direction. But just to see... One second. Let me just finish. It's just to see that the mutually contradictory categories that we tend to want to put on reality, and the self-other images that we are so fixed on and think are true, he's offering us alternatives to at least allow those to be fluid and to let go of our knowing about them or holding on to them, and to be willing to be the experiencing and the not knowing about those. Okay, Debbie, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, that seems true to me. That question I had was just of interest on this other future life description he has. I mean, I don't know how much we should take away from that, or he talks about this place that still has intellect, emotion, and will.
Where are you? You have to pick a page.
I'm on page 33. When
one second, let me get to 33.
He's trying to describe this place that your energy merges and hangs out until it's conceived again. So, I mean, I kind of read this and I see his framework there, but that doesn't sound true to me.
Okay, that's fine. Notice he says it's some mysterious. He calls it mysterious. And it is very difficult, and yet this is very common. It's a common practice in many Buddhist traditions. I mean, you might know that the Tibetan tradition puts even more emphasis on what they call bardo practice. In other words, the practice of dying and continuing even after the body dies to do practice with the body and with the person to enable this transition. If you don't, if it makes no sense to you, fine, leave it. No need to try to figure it all out. You've heard it, and if it doesn't, if there's no value to it, fine. And if there's a value to it, make use of it now or at a future time.
Okay. I mean, I have read the Tibetan book of Living and Dying, and I can see their process of dying. To me, this middle life seems like probably the basis of their reincarnation theories, because it seems so almost concrete that this you know, they're still still kind of holding on to the fact that there is intellect, but it sounds like they think it's kind of like a group intellect.
We don't have to figure it all out, and we don't, in a way, if we want to practice with it, we could work with it specifically. This, what we've got here, is a generalization and a simplification. And if it's a value, fine. If it isn't, let it go. Don't have to worry about after death practices. That's not for us to deal with. It's hard enough for us to deal with present life practices, and to hear that we could include these various ways of expressing past and future, but still, present life practice is moment enough, keeps us all busy.
Yes, I'm fine with that. So I'm just going to read it and appreciate it and go on.
Yes. See, if we go to page 35, the beginning of chapter 4, the three paragraphs down, he says, Buddhism teaches us that we are essentially equal, and at the same time, our reality is always different. So, each person's environment, position, experience, intellect, ability, interest, view of life, and view of the universe is different. And so the equality doesn't negate differences, and differences don't negate equality, because differences are manifestations of equality, and the equality isn't more, enriches the differences so that the differences aren't contradicted by the equality. That's, in some sense, we could see this as another way of expressing, but not exactly the same. Form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. Form means any form can occur, because all forms are fundamentally empty. And if it's empty of any fixedness, separateness, permanentness, then it's interpenetrated and interrelated to everything else. Therefore, any, if I use the word karmic energy, or any energy can manifest as form and disappear as form. When there's that, there's this. When there's not that, there's not this. And they don't contradict each other, because they're two sides of the same coin, so to speak. But of course, they're not different sides, and they're not anywhere else. And that's the important part of practice, because that enables us to have the freedom to be whichever form we are, because we don't get caught in the self-centeredness of it, because every form is exactly this equality emptiness, if I use the expression in that way, and therefore isn't better or worse for being the particular form it is. What we tend to do in our society, or in our point of view, not our society, but as humans, we tend to think this form is better, that form is worse, because we emphasize the particularities and we miss the equality of it. If it's the equality, then you can, whatever form you are is exactly equal to every other form, and therefore you can be that particular form because it's just this momentary that form, if I say it in that way. It's the essential equality, even though it's the reality at this moment in a different particular form.
Elihu, I have another...
Sure.
You know, in terms of constant change...
Yes.
Obviously, our bodies are constantly changing, but something... always kind of inside of me feels the same.
Yes.
So.
So what is that?
I don't always feel. I feel like there's constant change in terms of this energy interacting with all the energy around it, and the outward change, but. I hear what it's saying, but sometimes it feels like it's more solid inside.
Okay.
My emotions and my thoughts, my ways of thinking. I don't know. It doesn't always feel like there's so much change.
Well, you know, it might be useful to take note on a daily basis, as you start sitting or as you start your day, for a few minutes, just take note of what is my experience of right now being present. Now, you don't have to remember what it was like yesterday, because we tend to think, oh, yesterday was the same. But if we start taking note each day of it, and just looking, what's this being present, or who is this being present? And just notice it day by day, and just see what you discover. I don't want to say more than that, and we can talk about this individually at another time.
Okay.
In a way, I think... this is a good point to stop, because I'd like to go into depth in on this chapter 4, part A and part B, because they're very important. They're this whole law of causation or cause and effect. And he brings up a number of matters. Now, we're not going to have a class next week because it's Shin. So we could put it off for 2 weeks, and hopefully by then you will have read chapter 4, part A and part B, and chewed a little on this Yakujo's fox, which is considered quite a difficult case. It's enough to keep us busy at least for several weeks. So we'll leave that. Discusses this at length, this koan, which is exists in a number of different places and which Dogen talks about in at least 2 or 3 chapters. So I will stop here. Hopefully some of you will be able to be at Sesshin, and I'll be there, assuming the universe cooperates and the airlines, etc. And we will resume on, what day is that going to be? I'm not sure the date in November. November 15th. Since today is the 1st. On the 15th, we'll do chapter 4 and both section A and B. So please read them closely. Make comments. in your notes. Think on it, reflect on it, chew on it, let it just permeate and be around, and come in with questions that you have about it. I've mentioned the first few paragraphs, but don't stick just to the first part, part A, but go into part B, even though Yakujo's fox, Yakujo is also Baijiang? Yeah. It's complex and difficult, but if you struggle with it, it pays dividends, if I say it in that way. Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Good night.